The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
3 days away from the US election and probably in the region of 3 weeks away from the Irish election, the concerns about the capacity to find truth continue to be a major issue, with deepfakes already showing up in the Irish system and suggestions from previous US elections that bots and AI have been deployed by state actors to try to influence both the vote and to influence dissent. Joining me is John Clancy, who's founder and CEO of Galvia AI. He's also on the Enterprise Digital Advisory Forum, which advises government on the adoption of AI and AI tools. John, good morning.
Good morning, Anton.
John, the concern with AI, is it that we now have the capacity to create deepfakes and to create human-like interaction using AI that far outstrips anything we've had before? Is that it?
Yeah, that's certainly, that capability is certainly one of the fears, Anton. I think what's also one of the fears is, you know, what the likes of Elon Musk has been talking about in the last couple of weeks regarding woke AI, regarding the larger tech companies taking a position on, for example, the presidential race. So if somebody goes in and Googles looking for information, it may, prefer one candidate over another. So that is as much of a concern as creating deepfakes and fake news in the media.
Presumably, though, the way the search engines work and the way most social media algorithms work is they tailor what you get according to what they can read into your prejudices, likes, desires. And the presidential race would be no different.
Exactly. What we call curate the data so that it will confirm any bias you may have towards one candidate in an election versus another one. So if you like one particular candidate, you'll keep getting information, you'll keep getting data that'll reaffirm your position and your understanding or your view of the world, which is tricky because then how does somebody, you know, get more informed and get a more balanced view of what's actually happening?
And is that exacerbated by the increasing sophistication of AI?
Yeah, well, if you think about what AI does, Anton, is it'll do it at scale. So before, this was tricky to do, but now you can do this much faster and it's much more scalable than it was in the past. And that is the concern for some, that it can be just done at a much wider scale and much, much quicker.
And to what extent has the horse bolted and we're staring at the stable door? Because so much of the business model of the large tech companies is based on feeding pre-existing prejudices and stoking those kind of schism issues, those wedge issues. To undo that means undoing the thing that makes them their money.
It does. And I mean, we've learned these lessons in the past. I mean, 7-8 years ago when people realized we're the product when it comes to Google and the large tech companies. But I think, you know, I think especially Europe, I think, are more awake to this than and America is when it comes to regulation. I think we've gotten it right. Some say we're overregulated in Europe. I don't believe we are. I think we need to look at any AI systems that touch your daily lives should get a higher level. There should be a higher bar for them to play. And this happened only 3 weeks ago when Apple announced their new OpenAI version of Siri. And it's not being rolled out. All the features are not being rolled out on this side of the world because it may be in breach of the EU Act. I see that as a good thing. You know, some Americans see that as a bad thing because they have a lighter touch on regulation and they say, let it run. Whereas in Europe, we've put some guardrails around us to say anything that is being in research and development, anything that's been innovated on, that's fine, let that happen. But anything that's going to be deployed that will touch the population of a country needs a higher level of scrutiny. And personally, and as a business, we think that's a good thing.
What then about, so we have the issue of the algorithm and the issue of AI in search. What about the use of AI in terms of creative video? So the capacity to do deep fakes, which 10 years ago would have seemed revolutionary, are now three a penny. I don't think we have much in underpinning regulation about how they are used in the political system, or do we?
Not yet. Well, especially coming out of the States, we don't. But if you think about it, like this morning, you could create a script of a conversation for one particular candidate. You can then feed that script to a large language model. That large language model can then create, you know, you can say, I want it in the voice of Kamala Harris or Donald Trump or whatever, you know, your preferred candidate is. Then you can overlay that with them actually saying it, put them in a location where you want them to be saying this information in and get it out there. And then by the time it's brought down, it could already have done the damage. And that is a major, that is a big concern, especially in the States. It's so easy now. This ability is in the hands of lots of people. It's not as easy here, but this capability is here. And we, like any technology, you know, we get better at regulating it. But with social media, things can move so fast. That is where it becomes very, very tricky.
And presumably it is also sophisticated enough that it's very hard to tell whether it's real or not. I was speaking to somebody recently who said that they had done a recording for a US client, needed to make edits to it. And rather than going back to the client, they just used AI to put in the voice and match it and stitch it into the recording. When they then sent it back to the client didn't notice that it was AI impersonating them in some sections rather than them themselves.
Yeah, it's incredible the what you can actually do. I mean, text to video, you know, text to creating images is extremely powerful, even right now. And I think if you listen to it, maybe or watched it two or three times, you'd probably pick it up. But at that stage, it's out and it's gone. And that is the concern, that it is already, it's very, very good and very, very powerful.
What then about AI in terms of content creation? Because one of the things that you're seeing in academia, you're seeing it in business, you're seeing it in all facets of life, is people saying, okay, ChatGPT or Grok or whoever else, create me a 1,000-word argument in favor of X, and either using it as a jumping off point or using it as an end product. Is there anything to stop people doing that for public policy or to develop political manifestos or to create material for campaigning or canvassing?
No, there's nothing stopping anybody doing that. But however, I would, you know, look at this from the lens of, it's a very good starting point, but you're talking about general intelligence. You know, it is not specific. It will create something that is okay. You know, typically for kids, for the creative industry in marketing, it can help with the blank page challenges. If someone's just looking at a blank page, how do I create something? They're not that good yet. They want to pattern match what you're asking it. Like, they want to make sure that the user is kept happy. Their job is to keep you typing. That's what these LLMs are built for. They can't reason. You know, their context is still very, very difficult. They certainly don't have any opinion. You know, this, at the end of the day, it's mathematics, but at a whole other level. And when it comes, you touched on, you know, kids or students in universities. They have, you know, universities have a very big challenge. We do a lot of work with universities. And their challenge is, you know, if a student creates something that originally began from a prompt on ChatGPT or one of the tools they're going to use, is that allowed? And some universities allow it, some don't. You know, we would believe if a student creates a topic or an answer to a particular question, and they can still understand the context. If you actually sit an exam, they're able to give you back their opinion. But they used some ChatGPT, for an example, to create it. Well, is that okay or is that not? And that's what they're battling with at the moment.
But in other words, then, I get a question in a philosophy exam that says, compare and contrast or analyze the nihilistic view of Nietzsche. And I feed that into ChatGPT. It gives me 800 words. I paraphrase it into a document, hand it back in, and I can pass my exam on that basis.
You could. But if you were, what we would consider a better way of doing this is that they can find out whether you have done that. I think at one particular university, 49 students got reprimanded over this in the last month for using ChatGPT for that very reason. But why don't they take it a step further and say, okay, well, let's sit down, let's give them a test on that. And if they're able to answer all the questions on that topic, yes, they did use the tools that were available to them, which is quite smart. They're going to do this. I mean, this is not going away. Then if they understand the domain, then is that okay? Is that not okay? You know, if they've used a tool, yes, they've probably gotten there quicker. Some may see that as a lazy way, and maybe it is. But if they still understand the topic and the domain, yet they've used a tool to get them there, it mightn't have been ultimately what they came up with, but it's a slightly better version. Is that a bad thing? And that's the question that's that universities are grappling with right now.
When you say it's not going away, one of the things that we were told a couple of years ago was that we would soon all be living in the metaverse. And for about 18 months, there was a general broad consensus and fascination with legless avatars and how we would all use them. It hasn't happened so far. Now we have this thing that AI is going to take over the planet. Is it?
Yeah, good question. No, I don't think it's going to take over the planet. I mean, what's happened is that AI, our company's around since 2017. You know, we're more machine learning than generative AI. But what generative AI has done is it's giving a face to AI. You know, AI was something in the lab for data scientists, machine learning engineers, mathematics. And now people can actually interact with it and by that flashing little cursor on your screen and prompt it and ask it questions. And that the power of it, it's amazingly good at finding information, querying information, creating content, you know, predicting what's going to happen if it's trained on certain corpuses of data. It's very, very good where it's going to find, and that's where it's finding its niche in industries that have large amounts of data, large amounts of text. It's amazing.
But you see, those factors, when you lay them out like that, John, industries that have access to large amounts of data, a capacity to sift through that data, to create content accordingly, and to map predictions some distance into the future, they sound like exactly the things that politics lends itself towards and that could be hugely risky in a political setting. So what then, if you were giving recommendations or advice to global regulators in terms of how to make sure that AI is deployed beneficially in politics, what, if anything, is the advice?
The advice would be, number one, collaboration. They all need to get together. We have a framework to do this within the EU AI Act. And work closely together. Public-private partnership is 100% the way forward here. You know, this is not something that if I look at, this week, the EU announced 1.4 billion of investment in all different types of AI. 1.4 billion. Like, to put that into context, OpenAI have burnt through 1.4 billion this year already with one company. You know, we're not taking it seriously enough. We need to take tens of billions across the EU, build a proper framework, and political is definitely one side of it. We're not taking it. All the money is in the States. All the AI being developed is in America, in an unregulated, more or less, part of the world. We need to take it here. There's an opportunity. There's an opportunity for Ireland to like center it here. We're already lead on tech. Why don't we lead on this? Lead on the regulation. Don't see it as a negative thing. See it as a positive thing. And that way, we'll bring everybody along together.
John, thank you very much. That is John Clancy, who is founder and CEO of Galvia AI and a board member of the Enterprise Digital Advisory Board.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.